Major Notley, Reel 3. You were describing the Proclamation Day parade, and I think you were going to tell me what the Governor wore.
The Governor wore morning clothes, and he was mounted, therefore he had straps under his trousers. And he wore a white topi, as far as I can remember. So that was quite interesting. Then we had the great problem of the rates of march. I mean, we marched very fast, 144. So, as far as I can remember, we went first. Well, nobody was going to march at that pace, so there was a big gap between us and the Dogras, or whoever came next. And the camels, they had their own speed, and the mules, and so on. But it was a very great occasion. And there was always a party given by various people, and you know, one went off and drank a drink called Apple Bird, which, as far as I can remember, was honey and rum, I think it was, but it was a really good drink, and this was a sort of cocktail which was served up, generally, not in the mess, but, you know, one went off to somebody's house, and people were very generous. It was really, it was a box of water from the hall, very generous indeed. Particularly to young officers. So you had that wonderful life, you know, going out and calling on various families. If you knew they had a daughter, you called on them. And you left your car in a box, which was not in the house, at the end of the drive. And shortly you probably got asked out and met the fishing fleet.
And who were the fishing fleet?
Fishing fleet were the girls who came out to get married, find a husband. And there were lots of those, their parents, or they had relations, not always their parents, who were in forestry or PWD or Oak Gun or something like that. There were lots of those. And we had enormous parties. We had, the whole week was very well known because we hardly went anywhere. There was dance after dance after dance. There were various clubs you went to. There was one very big dance. When it was a government house dance, I think. I can't remember where it was, whether it was in government house or in a club. But anyway, the governor was present. And a great friend of mine, I will talk about later, had a drink of whiskey. And he said they thought it was stolen whiskey. In fact, it was stolen whiskey. Stolen was a little place on the way up to Simla, on the railway between Calcutta and Simla, which brewed beer and also produced whiskey. So this didn't go down very well.
What was this whiskey like? Did you try it?
Very awful.
It was awful?
Yes.
What about the beer that they brewed?
My beer was all right. It was okay. They bought it money. But there was also beer from Ceylon. Mali was another place. They called it the Mali Brewery, I think.
Yes.
In fact, it was not in Mali at all. It was in today's Ceylon. Do you want me to go on to the hill station? The hill station we went to was called Dag Shai. It was famous because a mutineer from one of the Irish regiments had mutinied. I can't remember who they were, the Munster, Fusilier or something. And they shot a chap who mutinied. His name was Gray. And that happened there. It was a very small station, but we shared it with another regiment. And very pleasant. They had a little polo ground and a sort of figure of eight you could go around. And there was a polo ground in the middle of one of the figures of eight. Lovely scenery, lovely climate. We went up there in the hot weather and we had to because it was so hot in the hall. So that was always looked forward to. And we used to march a lot of the way, and on the way marching back to Calcutta, where they caught the train, you went uphill some of the time because your feet were slipping forward the whole time. You had to ease your feet. So we used to go a bit further and ease the feet back so your toes weren't too sore.
Did you do any training when you were in the hill station, or was it just...
Yes, we did.
What sort of training did you do out there?
I think we used to go and do very small sort of technical exercises, toots. We couldn't dig very much, but there were toots and that sort of thing, and the officers had a little training. I had to give a lecture on the mess or something, I don't know what it was. And
I think you weren't you a weapon training officer at that stage?
I did become a weapon training officer. Yes. That was in the thing, because it's a difficult job.
Yes. Why was it difficult?
Because there was no fire weapons really in the hall. Well, it was at the range, that was all right, but the actual training and setting up of an exercise involved going out to a thing called the Hoodyara Drain, which was a very, very important freshwater canal, and all exercises were designed around that, because the whole country was flat in the hall. And I had a weapon training sergeant who went out and lived in the tent out there when we had the training. And we had to set up figure targets, popped up, that sort of thing. But that wasn't really, looking back on it, an easy thing to do, and possibly at the time the training was the best we could do. It was a very bad station from that point of view.
Short of facilities for live firing. Yeah. And the weapons you had were the Vickers Berthier machine guns.
Vickers Berthier.
Did you have mortars?
Yeah. We had wooden mortars.
Wooden ones?
Yes. I've been on the North Coast, I knew about these.
Yes.
I was given these mortars. They wouldn't. You stand around and put no mortars.
What about anti-tank weapons? Did you have anything like the boys' anti-tank rifle or anything of that sort?
Yeah. No. Don't really thought too much about tanks.
Yeah. So, the main weapon you had to fire was the Vickers Berthier.
And the rifle.
And the rifle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a pistol.
Did you consider the pistol a lethal weapon?
Okay. We had a limited amount of ammunition. I always remember that cooks had the flower pistol, and they were given 12 rounds a year, I think. You had to do a drill, and it was terribly important. Safety in weapon training was very important, and of course we knew all about that. And nobody really enjoyed putting the cooks through that course. One officer shot himself in the foot, I remember that, I don't say it was. It was a long time ago. But I mean, you've got to be very careful of it. It was a 4-5, remember? It's got
yes.
quite a big bullet.
Well, people do tend to get careless, don't they?
Yes. So we're very careful, of course, totally careful over ammunition and locking up arms and that sort of thing.
Did you have a grenade?
We had a grenade. I threw it when I was on the course, but I don't remember we had anyone to do it in the hall.
Did you have enough ammunition for the rifles and for the Vickers Berthier?
Plenty of ammunition for the rifles.
Yeah.
And Vickers Berthier, so not for the pistol.
Someone once said that if you were dealing with cooks, they were more lethal with the ladle than with anything else.
I think you're right.
What about the internal security situation in Lahore?
That was very interesting. We were in Birdwood Barracks. I was there with B Company called Lloyd Harris. And we were in Warris Road. And we were the nearest to the city. So if anything happened, we were supposed to go out and do our bit. So the internal security bill was drilled into us. We knew all about the bugle and the warning and the pick shot and the magistrate and all that. It's constantly rehearsed. But whilst I was there, we did have riots. We didn't, as a company, get involved. We had the CARCSO riots. Now, CARCSO, A-K-S-N-R, was a very sharp spade. And these were a paramilitary organization who armed themselves with these. And police, of course, had to deal with them first. I think they had a sort of band, a sling on their spades. And they were very dangerous. And one policeman lost his eye. Well, eventually, re-record him, but it wasn't my lot. I know somebody else went in to help me.
Was it one of the other companies in
the
regiment?
Yeah, it wasn't us, no.
Not you?
No, mm-hmm. Not our company. But I remember hearing a bit about it. Very unpleasant. I do remember when somebody had been killed, a famous Indian, and we had to go and line the route and pretend we went there, and they were actually taking the body away, and we my platoon had to go out and try and disappear into a much to make sure there was no trouble. But the convoy went past and all was well.
Do you know what the Caxas were trying to do, what their aim was, or what their ideas were?
I think there were always people like that wanting independence, perhaps, from the Indian government rather than the others. Of course, we had all these people on the frontier, the warrior swap and all that sort of thing. We can
yes.
answer that later. But I think they wanted countries that size who will always get disruption, same as they've got today.
I mean, were you conscious of a menacing atmosphere in Lahore at all at any time?
Not really. Personally, among the Indians you met, they were charming. Mm-hmm. You would be riding your bicycle, we all had bicycles, into the hall or something, and an Indian would ride up beside you and say, what is your name, how old are you, and so on. Quite open chat. They did speak English. We all learned Urdu, had to learn Urdu. That was very interesting.
How did you learn?
We had a Munshi, who was an English teacher, and I had one of my friends in staff that I'll talk about in a minute, who was a platoon commander, plus the other officer who, there were other officers there. One was a chap who was going to the Indian Army called Terence O'Brien, and he had to do a year with us before he went to the Indian Army to learn to command a platoon, because he'd be a company commander probably in the Indian Army. Also, very important to learn a language. And it wasn't necessarily Urdu, we had to learn Pashto or Gurkhan or whatever it was. And so, one had that. And I had a Munchi who would come in the afternoon, and we'd learn Urdu together. And that was a good way of passing time.
So, one to one.
It was frightfully hot, yes. Oh, yes, frightfully hot outside. You couldn't open the door. Mm. It was so hot. Well, things came to a pretty pass when it became compulsory to learn Urdu. An awful lot of officers didn't want to learn Urdu, so we had two classes. Those who wanted to learn, and those who did not want to learn. And I think the commanding officer was in the lot that didn't want to learn. And we used to ask very embarrassing questions from the Munshi, like, what is the Urdu for, what does Chanda mean? I think it was forbidden love or something, and the Munshi used to sort of think of the Kama Sutra and would laugh at like space as possible. So we pulled their legs. They were good luck to the Munshis.
Did you have anything to do with the police in Lahore?
I had some friends I used to. I had no official job. We had very close liaison as a unit.
Yes. I was just thinking about whether you liaised with them when you were doing your anti-riot rehearsals.
Yes. Yes, we did.
So
I mean, I also had a personal friend.
Yes.
They were a very good lot.
I mean, were they monitoring the political currents in?
Oh, yes. They had intelligence and very important. But we didn't go into the city, we weren't supposed to go into
the city. Yes. So you didn't actually see the bazaar area?
Very rarely, I know. Mm. I don't think I got into the city there. I can't really remember that.
Mm. Where were the barracks then? Were they in a cantonment outside?
Well, it was interesting. They were at the whole cantonment, Napier barracks we were in. You may remember the last century, it's pure Kipling, but there was a lot of talk about the conditions of the troop. And we were in Napier barracks out at the hall cantonments. And the government said that the troops had been moved to Myanmar. And Myanmar was merely another name for the Battery Win, so we got away with it. I think that's a story after you heard that one. Yeah.
What were these barracks like? Were they comfortable to live in?
Oh, very. The ox's nest was an old elephant shelter. And another cool place with all the facilities, good icebox and so on. The bungalows were okay. We had a bungalow. I was in a bungalow. We had one's own part of it. I may have another chap in the other side. I can't remember who it was, but I had a very comfortable bungalow. And
it was normal for subalterns to share, wasn't it, at that time?
You didn't share a room, ever.
No, but you shared a house.
Yes, bungalow. I can't remember who I had with me or had anybody, but it was very comfortable. Mm. And the troops were in what they call modern barracks. They literally had a thing called couscous tatty, which is something you pour water on, and they had a chap to do that. And whether they had a fellow to push the
punkawalla.
Punkawalla was a who did this, so I can't remember, but that's the story. Mm. And they were shaved in bed. Of course, they could pay the barber or the nappy, they could come around and shave them. They did that. No shaving in bed, no.
You had to look after your own shaving.
Yes, yes.
What was the food like?
Troops are very difficult because the British soldier are not like mangoes and things. Very little meat.
Doesn't like anything unfamiliar.
No, all the food came from up in Kashmir, Kulu Valley. Now, by the time it got to the troops in those days, it wasn't always the best. You know, and they keep it cool. So there was a problem there. But our food, and prepared to eat melons and, they had these watermelons, and provided you washed them, there's a stuff called pinky parnies or red stuff, antiseptic, we all like. After the mess, we could eat local food, we did very well.
Did you take to the local food?
Yes, they loved, didn't they? Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned that there was a nasty tiger shooting incident. Did that happen while you were in Lahore?
Yes. Very briefly, what happened was I went on a small arms course to Patmari, Central Provinces, and after the course was over, I was encouraged to go shooting. And that applied to all ranks, only the officers, and they used to go on courses. You could always borrow a rifle, and like that in those days. And a friend of mine on the course called Dick Watson, who was a 9th Gurkha, I'd not shot a tiger. I'd not even seen one. And he had shot a tiger, and he and I decided to go for 10 days. So we took a block in a very large area of country, in the centre of provinces. The area was called Dota Mahal, I didn't get matters too much, but he and I had a kill, which was a buffalo. I had a terrible thing to think about now, but that's what we did.
That was your bait.
That was our bait. Mm-hmm. We sat up in the charms and nothing happened, and after a bit we decided that a lot of peafowl came out by day, so we used to shoot peacocks. And peahens, they're good eating, though you didn't do that near a holy temple because they were sacred birds. And we got to a position where on the ground were these birds, and so Dick said, well, let's get out of the charms and see whether we can put some up to shoot. And there was another, it's a dry riverbed, I was in it. Dick was going along with the beaters. The beaters were local villages. You gave everybody a bit of lamb to paper. And by the end of the day, he turned up with a bit. You gave him tuppence or something, a lot of money for them, silly animals. And I heard a shot with a rifle. He had a double barrel with Jeffrey's 4.5 Express, and he fired. And I heard the shot. And then he appeared about 100 yards away in another what I was standing. He said, get your rifle, man. Well, I hadn't got any of the night rifle, but all the boys were up the trees by then, and then me and Brown with him. Then it was coming. Anyway, the tiger turned up and almost jumped onto him. He'd been wounded. And he hadn't reloaded. And he put the rifle up and fired at his forehead. And I think it must have bounced, or I mean, it was an enormous bullet. Or else the aim was deflected in some way. And the tiger jumped up to him like a cat, clawed him in the arms and bit him in the leg and pushed off.
Did you have a shot at it?
No.
Was it?
I suppose I could, but it goes together.
You were afraid of hitting him?
I was very afraid of hitting him. And then it was. Anyway, we had 15 miles to go with very little help from nobles. They kept on wanting to stop. We got a bullet cart. His leg was bleeding badly. I had to put tourniquet on. And during that journey, the bullocks broke it. So we had to push it to start with. I mean, they didn't like the smell of the blood. So we got a bigger one eventually. And he was in pretty poor condition. And we got to a place called Doja Mahua, where I stopped the troop train. There was complete signal set. There was nobody on this platform, but I was able to put signal. I was stopping the troop train. These are Madras sappers and miners who were going from Madras up to Thornhill or somewhere. And we got him on the train. They wouldn't touch her.
How long did it take you to get him to the railway station?
A long time. It was too long. Right? It must have been... he was bitten about 9. I suppose it was about 4 or 5 o'clock by the time we got there. We got him to Itasi Junction, which is... There was a Quaker, a mission there, with a doctor who operated on him. He'd been bitten in the leg and clawed in the arms.
Was he conscious all this time?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think when he operated on him, given him some guardian, but
yes.
The first night was awful. I had to nurse him because he was a big chap. The nurses couldn't cope.
He was restless, presumably.
Yes, very restless. We then sent to Jabalpur for a doctor. There was an army hospital, and an Indian doctor and a nurse. British nurse arrived and took over. But he was in a very bad way. And what happened in the end was that he died from septicemia. There was no penicillin. Mm-hmm. And it was not the tiger's teeth, but it was the muck under the claws that got into his arms.
Mm. So he got blood poisoning from that. Yeah.
And he wrote to me, and I wrote to him, and there's a strange story attached to this. I was in Murray when he died, as a cycle officer, a very interesting job, as a lieutenant, I suppose, or anything, or second lieutenant, wearing plain clothes and cycling codes from the frontier. And I had an illuminated clock in my room. I was living in a private hotel, and I heard my name being called 3 times, and I didn't think very much of it. 2 days later, or you know, it was 3 days later, I saw that he died. It was in the Civil Military Gazette. So, as I knew the nurse who had looked after him, I took the opportunity to write to her, which was probably wouldn't have been a loud morning. I said, oh yes, he died at that time. That's true. So that was an experience. The tiger became a man-eater, I'm afraid, like most of them do.
It didn't die of the wound he...
The tiger didn't die. No. I think it came around. We don't really know, but they were so common then, which was in those days.
Yes.
You see, they were Germans. They were the G-H-I-D-S, and the people there were so used to this sort of thing. The rest house we stayed at, the chap was 80. He had a key. You know, that was the key to the bungalow. That was all he had. He was 80. And he was the rest house keeper.
And they were used to being eaten by tigers.
Oh, yes. Terrible story. Anyway, it was really interesting. So, you know, I've seen tigers that now be in Africa, I've seen lions, and you're lucky I've seen a lot. I'm interested in that.
You mentioned you were on detached duty at Murray. How did that come about? How did you get on to detached duty?
I think they wanted to get rid of me, probably.
Oh, I see.
Anyway, they had a lot of job for me, so I became a cycle officer at Northern Farm.
Yes.
And I wore plain clothes, I lived in a hotel. We had to be within range of a telephone. You didn't have any mobile phones in those days. And I worked under the G3 Pops Northern Command, a very nice chap called McNamara, who was in the army. And directly a message came in Cypher, I had to be cycled.
Where were they coming in from?
North West Frontier, with Northern Command.
And they, would they be coming in by telephone or by telegraph?
Telegraph, I think. I mean, I was given the message. I was anything I was bothered about was getting done quickly.
Yes.
Making sure it was right.
What kind of ciphers were they using?
Oh, we had codes now, what were they called? It's terrible, I've forgotten, but they were quite right to ask.
Were they substitution codes or?
Yeah, yes.
Did you have the one time pad system or?
No, substitution, yes.
Were they complicated?
Quite, yes. And if then vicar was mentioned, I had to be doubly quick because the vicar was a fakir of Epi.
Yes.
Who, together with the Wally of Swat and that lot, were creating quite a lot of trouble up there.
On the frontier?
Yes. Mm.
What was going on the frontier then when you were decoding these messages? You must have got some impression from the traffic you were handling.
This is old history. How can I put it this way? There was always trouble on the frontier because the northern Indians, talking about the tribes, were always independent.
Yes.
And they had this big blood money. I mean, if you shot somebody, then you were obliged to be shot back at, and so on.
The code of revenge, the code of talion.
I mean, they had people called Cassidars, who, when you were on the frontier, I never got there, the battalion had finished, and I joined them. Cassidars were employed by the government to guard the route, but they, in order to keep going, they used to shoot at the column. Very often to make sure they, you know, show they were there. So you couldn't rely on these people at all. They had a factory place called Isherpur, where they made Lee-Enfield rifles, even down to the Star Bell. And the tribesmen used to come down into the various local cities with the rifles in their baggy trousers. And rather than close the place at Isherpur, it was better to know where they were.
Keep an eye on it.
Get rid of it, yes. So they were constant trouble.
What was the policy towards these people like the Wali of Swat and the Fakir? Was it to...
I don't think we ever thought that the government thought they could do anything except keep a reasonable boundary for them. From the empirical duties. And of course, eventually, in the long run, the Russians always wanted to get in through to get a presence in the Middle East.
Sounds as though the policy was really one of containment.
Yes.
Rather than trying to find a solution.
I think it was, maybe, yes. And we had these political officers, wife had one who did very well for the Atlantic Table Conference. He was a political service. Had a very interesting life up there. And we were well represented amongst the tribes as well as we could be.
With agents working for us.
Yes.
Why were you wearing plain clothes in this role? Was it because it was connected with intelligence work or?
I suppose so. I don't wear a uniform at all. But then he.
How long were you in this particular job as a cipher officer?
I can't remember, about probably 6 months or so.
Did you have any special training before you took up those duties?
Not really, I had to learn it when I got there.
So you were learning ciphering and deciphering on the job?
Yes, I think so, yes. But it was a very pleasant job.
What town were you in?
Town? I was in Murray.
In Murray itself.
Up the hill. Have you ever been to?
No.
Well, there were various hotels there, and I was living in Mrs. Davis's private hotel.
Where did you actually do your work? Was there a headquarters?
In my room.
In your room in the hotel, or?
Yes. I think I kept the had a box that was locked and the books were locked up somewhere. I didn't have to go to headquarters to do it. Mm-hmm.